Well, welcome to Local Matters. We are talking today to Jill Ramsey and Diana Wood from Putnam County Schools, and we're going to be talking about a number of things, including the role of the pre-K to fourth grade instructional supervisor, and we're going to be talking about summer camps and just a number of exciting things. And Dr. Wood is going to be replacing Jill Ramsey, who has served as the pre-K supervisor and currently still serves as pre-K supervisor here in Putnam County. So we're going to talk about the roles you guys play and about all the exciting things happening that have happened over the summer and that are going to happen as we launch a new school year. So maybe to start, some of our listeners may not know much about you. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about where you grew up and how you got here with the experience you've had. Jill, you want to start?
Sure. I'm the elder, so I'll just start.
I'm the elder in this group.
So I grew up in Cumberland County, just right down the road, and I actually went to college my first semester at UT Knoxville and decided it was way too big, so I immediately transferred to Tennessee Tech, which was much better for me. It's the smaller size, the more personalized learning, so to speak, and I actually majored, you'll like this, Bob, in business my first 2 years.
Good.
Yes, it was a great 2 years, but I knew business was not for me. So I watched roommates and girls down the hall having so much fun, and they were in education. So I changed my major to education, and I have never regretted that decision. This will be my 40th year in education, and I can honestly say I've loved every job I've done in education over the past 40 years. So good move on my part.
Well, you saying that business can't be fun?
No, business can be. Hey, and let me just say this. You have to know a little bit about business to run a school and work at the district office
you
as well.
You do indeed. Yeah, there's a
served
lot of,
me well.
A lot of leadership and management in the district
sure.
activities. So 40 years, man, that's quite a career. And Diana, tell us about your background.
Okay. I grew up in Warren County and came to college at Tennessee Tech, immediately majored in elementary education.
All right.
So, yes. And honestly, what probably prompted me to, I loved kids always, but when I was in high school, I tutored as part of a you know, probably some kind of honor society or whatever. And I taught a man that was about 64 years old to read. And that was when I caught the bug for education. And that was just watching his light bulb come on is what prompted me to go ahead and major in education. And then my first job was in Memphis. And then my husband was in medical school. So then we moved to Nashville. So I taught in Nashville. And then we moved to Cookeville in 1999. And I started my teaching at Capshaw Elementary, taught fourth grade, moved into the role of assistant principal. And then when Dr. Kim Wright retired, I became principal there. And so now I'm excited about the new role in Putnam County Schools.
Well, boy, that's quite a career. And just full disclosure, both of you have had at least one of my granddaughters in
yes.
as a student in one role or another. So thank you for that. And thank you. If I calculate right, there's about 68 or 69 years of service here between you. And
yes, sir.
So thank
yes.
you very much for all that service to Putnam County Schools. And Jill, you are going to retire. Is that correct?
Well,
sort of retire.
Yes,
sort of
kind
of.
Yes. My official last day in this role is September 30th. And in that time between now and then, I'm just going to work to help Dr. Wood transition into my role. And then after that, I'll be doing the ever so popular 120-day contract with the Putnam County Schools. And I'm going to get to really do what my passion is, which is really working with teachers on the science of reading, doing a lot of training with that, and then leaders as well, and then just helping Diana with anything, you know, that comes up that she may need help with during her first year. It's a lot to learn. And that role actually changed from when I started. I was predominantly worked in the pre-K world as the pre-K director, and that was a big learning curve for me. And then tried to transition Putnam County in this role to really looking deeply at curriculum and instruction. And so that's been a passion of mine, is to improve, you know, student outcomes. That's what we do, and to support schools to get there. So I'm really proud of that work, and I want to continue that work in some capacity.
Well, that's great, and I'm glad you're going to still be connected to Putnam County Schools in some ways. And Diana, you've been at Capshaw a long time. It's a great school, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And there are just a lot of great teachers and outstanding students there, and I know you basically spent a long time there, so it's a great place to celebrate.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you'll be doing in your new role, and Jill, you're doing that role at this point. So between the two of you, just tell us a little bit about what the pre-K supervisor does.
Okay, pre-K supervisor, which luckily for Diana, we've named a new pre-K director, which is Allison Painter, and she was a previous pre-K teacher and did an outstanding job. And for the past few years, she's been a coach for pre-K, and she's going to take over that role to really be the director of
pre-K. So you go first through fourth grade then?
K through.
Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
K through four. She'll go K through four.
Got it.
Yes. And so for a pre-K director, it's all things pre-K. And a lot of people don't know this, but pre-K is kind of a separate thing from Putnam County Schools. It's a grant through the state that we have to write every year and receive that, so we can lose classes based on enrollment and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of compliance and a lot of guidelines to that. But I know that Diana can speak to the fact that they can tell when these kids go from our pre-K program into the kindergarten. Those kindergarten teachers can really tell that they've been part of the pre-K program.
Sure.
It's not like Head Start. It's not like daycares. It's very structured, and they have standards to follow, and they really do a great job of preparing them for the work that they're going to do in kindergarten. They prepare them for school. So she's not going to, Diana's not going to have to do pre-K. So she's going to really focus on K-4, which is more of the same, really diving deep into the work of curriculum and instruction and student outcomes. What's going to get us there? What we want, we're not going to be satisfied until 100% of our kids are reading proficiently and on grade level or above. So that's the work. I mean, basically. And of course, you know, we do math and social studies and science and all that. But if they can't read, you know, that's the real, you know, gist
it's the
of
fundamental.
It.
Reading is fundamental, isn't
right.
it? Well, this time of year, Diana, I know I can't put myself back in the mind of a kindergarten student or a first grader, but they've got to be excited about this whole new adventure they're going into.
Yes, that's right. And there are families, you know, all over that are sending their babies to school. And so we have some wonderful schools that are ready to receive them and move them forward in their education. And I've just become a little community of learners.
Well, for these little youngins that are coming into the K through four, but especially the kindergarten and first grade, what can mom and dad or the guardian do to help you the most? What's the things they can do to make them confident learners?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say the number one thing they can do is read to their kids every
Absolutely.
Night. And as their child starts to learn to read on their own, let them practice. I can't overemphasize the impact of reading aloud to your children every night, you know, and just make it a fun kind of family time, bedtime stories, those kinds of things go a long way in vocabulary, building vocabulary and conversation skills and just social skills. All kinds of things come from just simply reading to your children.
And it can be any kind of reading. It's the mm-hmm. reading process that's the important thing.
Absolutely.
I know we took our kids to, we have a thing called Camp Mimi, and they go away with Granddad and Mimi for a week. And we took them to Standing Stone this summer, and the ranger up there had a really good little camping stories, ghost stories kind mm-hmm. of book. And we read that.
Yep.
And,
yeah.
I think I was more scared than they were about the stories. It doesn't matter what kind of reading, it's the reading that's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, can you tell yet? I mean, we've just started school, but, and we're going to talk in the second session a little bit about COVID and, sort of the issues that we'll see this year, but it looks like things are off to a good start at this point.
They are. It's been very quiet and very smooth. We haven't gotten a lot of phone calls from schools, and you know, we're just trying to go out and visit the schools and make sure they have what they need. But I think everybody actually are so happy to be in person with no masks on their face. Some of these kids have never seen their teachers in the building without a mask on.
Isn't that
so
funny?
Lots yes. of excitement and yeah. just ready to go back to school. And I think that goes for the teachers and the leaders and the students.
Yes.
And I hope we can continue that. I know we're all, as we speak, we're in a journey that things might change on us, but we are sure glad to see them back and glad to see them where we can look at a smile. This is Local Matters. We are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Local Matters. We are talking to Jill Ramsey and Diana Wood from Putnam County Schools, and we are talking about the summer experience that some of our students had this summer, and also about school launch, sort of the early days of the new school year here. So, and Jill, I know this was more your baby, so I'll start with you on this one, but we had a program here in Putnam County this summer called Summer Learning Camp, and we want to talk about that and something called STREAM as part of what we're doing there. But tell us about Summer Learning Camp.
Yes, I think the last time I was actually on the show, we were gearing up for summer reading, and we were really excited about, you know, the opportunities for kids. And I think I talked about, you know, all the good things that we had planned, and now I can talk about how successful it was, because I feel like, and a lot of people feel like, that worked in the program and that attended the program, that it was extremely successful. Initially, well, the camp at the elementary level was for K through 4 students, and then there was a middle school bridge camp as well. The bridge camp had a lot less participation, which makes sense because middle school kids don't want to go to summer school. But at the K through 4 level, we had about 900 kids that signed up.
That's
a huge number.
It is.
And so it was for 4 weeks. Now we realize that families have vacation, they have church camps, they have and 4-H, you know, all kinds of things going on in the summer. So we were just hoping that we would get, you know, fairly decent, you know, attendance during the school for those 4 weeks. So what we try to do is really make it a fun opportunity. Of course, we were required, and I think I said this on the last show, 2 hours of reading and 2 hours of math, because I wanted the public to know this wasn't like a SAC camp or like an after-school program. It was intense work. So what we wanted to do is really make that Friday stream opportunity something that the kids really look forward to all week. And then, of course, we built in some incentives like ice creams if you had good attendance all week, or just some kind of little, you know, treats and things like that that the kids could work toward by Friday. But on Friday, we had Mr. Bond, the science guy, to zoom in. He zoomed into all three locations. For those people who don't know, we had three locations, Prescott South, All Good, and Cornerstone, so that we were all in all corners of the district. So Mr. Bond would zoom in on Fridays and do a science, you know, experiment. And then he had actually sent the materials to all the locations for summer school for them to actually have hands-on experiments the rest of the day with whatever the topic was, whether it was outer space or water or whatever they were studying that week. So it was a different topic each week that they delved into, and they did experiments with them. And it was kind of a novel thing to have somebody zooming in, you know, the science, and they were all familiar with Mr. Bond. So that was huge. What I heard from parents is that kids were excited when they picked them up. They had a lot of fun, but you have to remember that they were doing a lot of reading and math while they were there. So ideally, you know, I don't think we were really thinking that we might close major gaps due to COVID, but what we were trying to do is not have a slide, because kids typically slide. You hear that summer slide, yes, phrase a lot. So they might regress a little bit. And so when they start back, you're trying to fill that gap and then continue on. So if we had, so for example, we had 900 kids, basically 500 to 600 kids attended regularly. I still think that's huge, because that's 500 or 600 kids that we know without a doubt did not slide. When I hear parents talk about it, they talk about the fact that, you know, my kid was excited because when they got in the car, they talked about kids that they had met from other schools that were in similar situations. Yeah. You know, I'm not the only one going to school. There's a whole school full of people here that are going to summer school. They met new people they had never met before that doesn't attend their school. And that was exciting for them because, you know, new friends, new opportunities to make connections with other friends. So many positive things that came out of it that weren't anticipated, that we kind of residual positives that weren't even on our radar initially. We were just trying to really close gaps with kids and you know, make them better readers and, you know, better at math and make, let them have a little fun at the same time. So for those 500 or 600 kids at the elementary level that attended regularly, I would love to see their data this year and see what that looks like and how it carried over into the school year. The great thing is that we know that next year by law, we have to have the summer learning camp. Every year after that is just bridge camp, which is middle school. But I think if it's successful and they see that it's beneficial, then they might say, let's do this summer learning every year.
I think so, too. And we don't want to forget that it helps the parents, too. I mean, it gives parents a break, and many of them are full-time working. And so it's good all the way around. Well, I know we don't have a lot of data yet nationwide or locally or whatever on gaps and COVID gaps caused by the pandemic. But we'll talk a little bit about that and just maybe share what you can. It's obvious from the challenging year that we had, or year and a half, that the potential for gaps was there. Mm-hmm. Do we know anything with nationwide data at this point, or even regional or local data?
Well, we can't talk about our data
yet.
I
know you can't talk locally specifically.
Yet. But I will say that, you know, while we were hopeful that our data would be, you know, just exceed, you know, because we were in school all year. I want to remind everybody that, yes, we you know, there was COVID going on, but we remained in school all year. And but I think Tim Martin reminded us at our meeting this past week that we were in school all year, but we have to remember that in during that time, we had lots of teachers that were having to go out and quarantine. And, you know, so when a teacher's missing, they're not getting instruction like they right. would normally. So we have to remember that while we weren't out of school, we still had lots of effect of COVID.
But I
have to brag on Dr. Wood's school Capshaw. I mean, some of their data, just looking at it, and she can speak to that, really was very positive and looked really good. So while we can't talk about specific data, I mean, I think we're encouraged by what we saw. I can, you know, I'm just judging by the state data, I think we feel really good.
That's great. That's great. Well, all through the year, staying in touch with teachers every week or two and through this program, I kept feeling things are going pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, the teachers really did step up, didn't they?
They did.
That was you guys weren't trained to handle a remote pandemic-laden bunch of face mask kids. And it, my gosh, it just was a phenomenal year where the teachers came in and turned it around, and things went remarkably smooth given what could have happened. And Diana, we want to talk about your Capshaw experience last year just a little bit in terms of the pandemic. But for right now, this is Local Matters, and we're going to take a quick break. Welcome back to Local Matters. We are talking to Dr. Diana Wood and Jill Ramsey from Putnam County Schools. And Diana, we were talking before the break about your former school where you've spent a large number of years. You were principal of Capshaw Elementary, and Capshaw is a remarkable school, but how did the Capshaw kids do with the pandemic last year? It was a big challenge for everybody, wasn't it?
It was a big challenge, but I will say that, speaking of remarkable, the Capshaw kids did a remarkable job. You know, just, we didn't know what to expect, but they just came right in wearing their mask. Their parents were wonderful. The Capshaw families just really, I think they were so thankful that we were back in school after having that COVID closure in the spring. And then, of course, our faculty and staff took all the regulations and continued teaching like nothing. And I know that's what happened at Capshaw, but in talking to principals all over the county, I know that's what they saw in their buildings as well. Just school communities coming together and making the best of a situation that we never would have dreamed that we would be in.
The teachers certainly weren't prepared for this in the sense of any specific things, but they were well prepared on handling whatever was thrown at them, and that's a real tribute that they all reacted well. But the kids did too, didn't they? Mm-hmm.
They sure did. They absolutely did.
And I know, talking to my grandchildren, wearing a mask was just part of what you did. Mm-hmm. It was just part of wherever you went, part of the time at that point. I think we also ought to brag on the parents. They were in a different role last year, and many of them even had at-home learners.
That's right. And a lot of, if they were in school in person, there were lots of regulations that were, that came into be very quickly, different changes with arrival and dismissal and volunteers and lunch procedures. All of those things changed immediately, and the parents, the families did a great job embracing that as well.
Yeah, I was joking with some of the deans out at Tech that we ought to give every parent in the county a certificate, maybe not a diploma, but a certificate for a in-residency teacher for the year or something, because they all had a challenging year in addition to the kids and the teachers too. Well, we were talking earlier about summer learning camps and something called the Summer Slide. And the Summer Slide happens every year. It's not just something we saw during the pandemic. But I used to explain it to my kids by saying I played a lot of tennis when I was young, and I played tennis in college. And if I took the entire summer off and didn't play tennis, I would be terrible by the time September rolled around. And that's true with math or reading or anything else, too. Once we stop practicing it, we slide a little bit, don't we? Absolutely. So that's what the Summer Slide's all about, is trying to stop folks from stepping back from where they're learning left off at the end of the year. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's a great analogy, too, because we talk about practice, and reading is the same way, and math, too. Any kind of skills-based, you know, learning has to be practiced. And so some kids, not all kids, but some kids love to read. So if they've got a book in their hand all summer and they're reading, you're not going to see much of a slide from those kids. But if they just are, especially if they're struggling readers, and those are the ones that you definitely want practicing during the summer. And so those are the children, if they're struggling readers, you know, it's hard to practice basketball when you struggle with it. Like, you just go on to another sport. But with reading, you can't do that. You have to continue to practice and practice. So those children are, you know, the ones that struggle the most, and we see the most slide from. But, you know, we've got something called the WOW bus that's back on the road, and I don't know if you were going to mention that or not.
Well, I think we should mention it, and maybe mention Mark Rogers, too, as a champion of the WOW bus.
Yes, the WOW bus, which is a way to distribute books throughout the community, and we don't ask people to come to us. We take the bus out to the people, and they usually follow the summer feeding program, Baxter, Monterey, All Good Community, and that sort of thing. And we make sure that those kids have a book in their hand so that they can practice during the summer, because a lot of people assume that books are easy to find and that sort of thing. And not for families who don't get out much or can't afford to go to the library and places like that, because it, you know, gas costs money. And there's been a lot of struggling families, especially during COVID. So, you know, we've gone, Barbara Greason for a long time took care of the WOW bus and did an amazing job in getting information out to parents about how to use the books to help their kids. And so Mark Rogers has been the driver for the bus since we started. And just that was a passion for him. And he volunteered his time to do that. And then when COVID hit, and Barbara's really helping take care of her parents and doing other things right now, so Mark stepped up and said, you know, I think this is a calling for me. So I saw him today picking up books at one of the schools for the WOW bus, and he's put like numerous hours already into that, and will be out in the community taking the bus to the Fall Fun Fest or any, you know, local community events and things, and to the schools. And really, you know, after a conversation with him this morning, letting him understand that you can go to any event in the community that you're asked to go to, because that's taking the books out to the people is what we do there. And of course, we did that in the summer. And this past summer, we weren't able to do it. The bus went to some of the schools during summer learning, but not really out into the community. If they weren't in school, they didn't get them. So we're really looking forward to seeing the bus out on the road a lot this year and then into the next summer.
Well, so look for the WOW bus wherever you are this summer or this fall, and encourage your kids to take advantage of it. Well, we've mentioned a term in the earlier session called STREAM, and STREAM really started as STEM, and then it became STEM, and we added an A, and it became STEAM, and then we added an R, and it became STREAM. So let's see if I can get this right. Science, technology, reading, arts or agriculture, education or engineering, and I've heard both, but engineering was the fundamental, and then mathematics. So STEM became STREAM, So tell us about what happens in the K-4 program with STREAM. Science and technology are exciting things to a young kid, aren't they?
They are. And Diana at Capshaw, you had a STEAM or STREAM program. Why don't you
talk about the program at Capshaw?
Well, we basically, STREAM or STEAM or STEM or whatever you want to call it, is basically getting back to how kids used to play, how I played when I was a child. I would create things. I would go out in the woods and make my own path and make a little. I remember making a little playhouse, those kinds of things. And so it's integrating those subjects, but becoming problem solvers. And instead of just sitting in front of a computer or an iPad or, you know, video games at home, since that's going on a lot in the home, it's become popular in school to have a STEAM program or a STEM program so that we can create those problem solvers, because that's something natural in kids, and it doesn't always get enhanced by their own play like it used to. And so at Capshaw, and we actually modeled this from Prescott has Wonderland Woods, but we fenced in a part of Capshaw Woods so that kids could go out, our kindergartners could go out and just play with no playground equipment. They swing on vines, they walk across logs, they find shapes that they've talked about in class, in nature. That's a component of our STEM program. But it's really just getting back to kids seeing a problem instead of thinking, oh, well, thinking, how can I solve that?
It's a hands-on learning kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Dirty fingers kind of learning.
Right.
And it having watched them, it's fun. And even kindergarten level kids can have a lot of fun learning this way.
That's right. And I think that there's some kids that are just innately prone to be good problem solvers like that and deep thinkers like that. But I feel like it's in every child. And so I wonder if I would have been more maybe in the field of engineering, or would have gravitated more towards another field if I had a STEM program. I don't know.
And
but
I think that's part of the reason to have them, mm-hmm. is it shows kids, both boys and girls, that the careers are there, and they're fun, and they're exciting, and they're challenging, and that's part of what it's all about.
Right. And I think the last list I saw, the top wage-earning careers were STEM careers most recently. So,
And we can all look to some great role models who've come out of local schools, and we've had astronauts from Overton County, and we've had them from Tennessee Tech. You name it. There's great careers out there for kids that go through these STEM programs. Well, as we close this program out, let's leave on the note of reading is fundamental. Just what can you encourage parents to do with their kids as one last word on let's get them to read?
Well, I think Diana mentioned that how important reading is, but I want to make it even simpler than that, okay? I want parents just to talk to their kids. You can do that in the car. You can do that in the grocery store when you're going down the aisles. You don't have to have a book. Tell those stories at night just out of your head, or just ask your kids questions. But talking to your kids is the number one thing that they can do. And you know what? Kids love to talk to their parents.
Diana Wood and Jill Ramsey, thank you so much for being with us today. We've had a great program to talk about summer learning and talk about STEM and STREAM and STEAM and all of the other acronyms that are part of those learning experiences. But the fundamentals are we've got some great teachers and some great kids, and we're going to look forward to a great year. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.